the late 80s, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the podcast Pat Trek. My continuing mission to introduce my friend Patrick to the best show that ever ran on television, and to boldly go where millions of white guys with glasses have gone before.
Hello, welcome to Pat Trek. This is the show where my friend, Pat O'Rourke, introduces me, Patrick Winiger, to Star Trek The Next Generation, a show that I've never seen.
And I have seen a ton of times. And Patrick, I've got to say this. It's really hard to measure up to last week's episode.
Measure of a Man?
Yes.
It's hard to measure up to Measure of a Man?
It really is. It's hard to do. This is not a bad episode.
No, it's not bad. I didn't hate it, but it's no Measure of a Man.
It's not quite as powerful as last week's.
Yeah, we're talking about the Dauphine.
The Dauphine? Is that Dauphine? How you say it? Nobody ever uses that word in the whole episode.
They do like once at the beginning.
Oh. All right, well, I didn't get that. I didn't pick that up at all. There's a lot of really confusing elements to this episode.
Oh, yeah.
I think that that's probably what takes a pretty simple, good story.
Yep.
And makes it tricky. It
makes it way
things.
More confusing than it needs to be because there's like five different things going on.
Right, and I don't understand a couple points, which we'll get to, but first, I have a really fun fact for you.
Okay, cool.
Did you know the special effects team worked really hard, right, to achieve those morphing effects? That was pretty cutting edge for its time. But the catch is the director thought the outfits looked horrible, so he minimized the amount of time you saw the monsters.
Oh, wow.
So he spent a lot of time editing around the fact.
And then it like looked bad, so they were like...
Yeah.
Did they rewrite the episode to be like, oh, they could only change like twice?
He kept trying to shoot around it, so you don't see him. You see a lot of people reacting.
Okay. I did notice that.
Hated how that monster outfit looked, which it did look pretty bad.
Yeah.
It was not good.
By today's standards, yeah.
Yeah, I would say by those standards.
Yeah.
We've seen scarier things. It was strange, but the morphing effect was pretty cool.
That was pretty neat. Mm-hmm. Listeners, you may hear a little rattling around background. Because we have a special guest today. It is Ozzy, Pat's dog.
Yeah, I brought my dog. My wife is out of town.
Yeah, so if you hear some barks or some rattling of a dog tag, it's just an actual dog. So apologies for
not
the
a shapeshifter,
nope,
I promise.
It's a real dog.
Yeah, my apologies.
No, that's okay.
This is very unprofessional.
No, I mean, you gotta watch the kid, man.
Yeah, he's a good dog. Yeah. I like him. We get along.
Yeah, I remember we recorded a Making New Friends at my apartment, and my dog bit you.
He did. I got too animated.
You were too much into the character, and he thought you were someone else.
Yeah, and I...
and he nipped at you.
Yeah, sometimes I start yelling. It scares Ozzy when
oh,
I podcast.
No, it scares the shit out of Joe.
Oh, yeah, he hates it.
Yeah.
I get excited!
Yeah. Dogs don't understand this, though.
No, they think we're just sitting at a table yelling at each other.
So, Ozzy, if we start yelling, it's just because we're excited to talk about this episode of Star Trek. It's not because there is a robber in the house.
Yeah.
It's not because there is a cat.
Just don't bite Patrick.
Here, come here, buddy. No.
I like holding it over his head.
He loves me.
Joe bit me.
Well, he's bit me, too.
Yeah, and at dinner. It was fine.
Yeah. Yeah. So, anyway, what was going on this week? This was February 20th, 1989. I remember last week, I think we had a pretty slow news week. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of stuff happening.
Mm.
This week, Oliver North is on trial.
Mm.
He was indicted in the Iran-Contra affair. That's when we traded arms to Iran in exchange for hostages and then gave arms to right-wing rebels in Nicaragua. And it was all done against the approval of Congress, and Oliver North was kind of like the fall guy slash also involved.
So who hired him?
Reagan.
Reagan did?
Reagan definitely knew about it.
Why is Reagan so loved, Patrick?
I don't know.
He did a lot of crazy stuff.
I can't stand that dude.
Yeah.
But yeah, Reagan definitely knew about it, but Oliver North was like a general that was heavily involved. And
gotcha.
At this point...
Every president needs a fall guy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, got yeah. to get a fall guy.
For Obama, it's Biden.
Yeah. So... Orrin Hatch, who is still currently senator from Utah, I believe, is saying that there's going to be about to be a like some huge bombshell in the coming weeks. I can't really remember what it was. Oliver North definitely did that shit. He got convicted on 3 counts of perjury or something, and those convictions were overturned. And then
Then
he ran for Senate in Virginia.
Did he win?
No, but he has a show on Fox News now.
Does he really?
Yeah. The other thing... Okay, so...
Speaking of Fox News.
Speaking of... Well, I guess, yeah. All right, so you know how David Duke is in the news now?
Yes.
David Duke, on February 20th, 1989, has just been elected to a state legislature seat in Louisiana.
Wow!
David Duke, who 10 years before this was the Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan, is, like, trying to pass himself off as, like, oh, I'm reformed, kind of. Still definitely racist. Vote for me. And he fucking won.
That's crazy.
He would go on to run for governor against, I think, Edwin Edwards and would lose, but it was, like, way too close for anyone's comfort.
In Louisiana, of all states.
Yeah, Louisiana.
That's shocking.
Yeah, which is a pretty diverse state. It's a lot more diverse than a lot of people think.
Right.
So, yeah, that's going on. Weird news week.
Oh, wow.
February 20th, 1989.
A lot of conspiracies going
on. Yeah, man. The late 80s were fucking weird. I was only, like, 3 years old.
Yeah, I don't remember it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what was going on.
All right. Well, let's get into this.
Let's get into this episode, which is much less interesting than the actual news of the real world this week.
That's fair. There were some beautiful character moments in this episode.
Yeah.
But as far as what actually happened, again, hard to track.
Not a lot of stuff happened. It was hard to figure out.
Yeah.
And I even like normally try to look at the Memory Alpha wiki for recaps just to, you know, refresh my memory, and I couldn't find it.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like, it was like a paragraph long. No one cares about this episode.
Yeah, highly forgettable, and which is crazy because it's on the heels of such an amazing
one of the
episode.
Best episodes, you know, that I, say, at least the best one I've seen so far.
Some say of Next Gen.
Really?
Yeah, some people. It depends on your personal preference. There's some amazing stuff that's coming up. But, you know, one of the better episodes. It's just a really strong episode.
Yeah, so listeners, if I skip over some stuff, I'm sorry. I forgot a lot of this episode, and I just watched it.
Yeah, we watched it together. We had a couple, And we're playing with the dog.
Yeah, I know. And really kind of hard to track what was going on, but I'll do my best.
Yeah, let's do it.
Anyway, so the Enterprise is on a mission to transport the titular Dauphin, or Dauphine. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right. She is the heir to this world, Dalad IV. And now she's been on exile, and she's been raised by a governor, basically. So the heir... Her name is Celia. She's like a teenage girl. Her governess is Anya, who's an older lady. So they are going back to their home world. Celia is like the heir to the throne, and the Enterprise is taking them there.
So I'm already confused. Was the mission at the beginning of the episode to pick them up? Because they stumble upon them, right?
And there is no explanation. There's no captain's log at the beginning.
Yeah.
It's like total silence.
In,
it's just you find this out like in a conversation on the bridge.
Well, and they right away ask, what species are you?
Yeah. Well, because so they go to the planet to like pick them up, basically.
Right.
And it's like the planet where they've been exiled. There's like this bullshit conversation. It doesn't matter with like they can't get through the atmosphere and it's all garbled.
Well, that's why they can't look at them.
Yeah.
Right.
And so they, you know, the Celia and Anya, they ask like, well, what species are you? They say human, even though. That's not necessarily true in the ship. Worf is right there, guys. And
I know. Why didn't Worf say, hey, and Klingon?
Right.
And then Data go, and an android?
Right. And Betazoid.
And Betazoid, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Picard?
So, yeah, it's just they have communications issues. They beam these people aboard. One of them is a young woman, Celia, heir to the throne of this warring planet. The other one is her caretaker, Anya. That's pretty much all you need to know about the beginning.
Right.
There's a couple, like, cool lines. They mention how, like, all their technology is warlike.
Yes.
And I think Troy makes some crack about that, and Worf is like, security. Some people prefer security to comfort.
I will say, Worf...
Worf has some great lines in this episode.
Really shines in this episode. And Wesley Crusher doesn't do too bad
either. He's not insufferable. I'll give him that.
Two characters who were having a rough start. Season one for both of those characters was not very good.
No.
But in this episode, they both play a nice role and have some really nice moments.
Yeah.
Again, I mean, pointless episode.
Yeah.
But
it doesn't matter at all.
No.
Some of the things that happen here. First, Riker is kind of acting creepy. I'm thinking that he's going to be the guy that's creepy because he's like, oh, Celia, let me show you around.
And he's just definitely
like,
interested.
And it's like, dude, she's like 16 years old.
Is she?
Yeah. She's a teenager.
Yeah, okay.
Well, so maybe Riker's just constant. He's like in a constant state of sleaze. But what happens instead is Wesley clearly takes an interest.
Yeah.
Because he's like working with this magnet or something. And she says, oh, is that a superconductor or such and such? And he's totally impressed that she knows what it is. He's smitten already.
Yes.
We know that this is going to be the crux of the episode.
Yes.
The A-plot, if you will.
Which, you got to give it up to Riker. He backed off.
Oh, well, I don't think he was ever interested. I think that's just how his character is.
He definitely seemed like he was interested.
I thought that's
the
what
first,
was going
like,
to happen.
Three
I was
lines.
Like, oh, God, Riker, no.
But then he saw the Wesley Crusher thing going down.
And that she's like, 16 years old.
You know, we'll get into her age later.
Okay, yeah. I don't know how old Wesley is at this point.
No, but they're supposed to be of the same
they're
age.
Of the same age or appearance, because remember, they're shapeshifters.
Oh, we don't know that yet.
We didn't get into that yet.
Spoilers!
Okay, so back on the bridge, Troy's talking to Picard and saying that, like, oh, they're hiding something. But not their feelings. It's just that they're not who they say they are. Or what they say they are.
Yeah, that's her insight.
Yeah.
They're not what they say they are.
This is real cryptic. I don't
what
know what to get. I don't know what to get from that.
No.
I thought this was going to be like some Huck Finn situation where these are people
right.
pretending to be royalty so they can just like grift everyone on the starship, which would be cool.
Yeah. Like Half Solo or something.
That would have been a set to kill already. I like that premise.
Yeah.
But that's not what's going on.
No.
It's not they're not who they say they are. They are royalty. They're not humanoid, mm-hmm. as I guess what we're supposed to get from this.
Which, hey, fellow Star Trek fans, tell me if you know this, because I don't know. Are they at all related to Odo and the people from the Delta Quadrant, or is that a completely different race?
Odo,
you have no idea what I'm talking
about.
No,
I've seen pictures of Odo. He's the guy that looks like Mike Pence.
Yeah, and... Never thought of that?
Guys with his eyes real close together?
Yeah, well, he's a shapeshifter,
yeah.
But he's not a solid. He always calls humans solids.
Oh, so he's a liquid.
He's a liquid, yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
He's kind of like Alex Mack. Like, they do a lot
yeah,
of that
yeah.
Alex Mack kind of effects for
oh,
him in,
like
in Deep Space Nine.
Capri so, Sun stuff.
Is there any relation between these shapeshifters and Odos? Because Odos are from the Delta Quadrant that they've never been to before and XYZ, but... Seems like a big continuity problem that we do know about shapeshifters.
Yeah.
Like, we've experienced them in TNG, and then they didn't know anything about them in Deep Space Nine, so I'm just wondering if there's a connection point that I'm missing.
Maybe.
Or this episode was forgotten by literally everyone, including the writers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing that we find out in this conversation on the bridge is that Dalad 4 is a planet in what's called tidal lock, so it means that one side of the planet is always sunny, the other side is always in darkness.
For a year at a time?
I think forever.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't rotate.
Yeah.
So that means that two distinct cultures have been brought up on the planet. And as Data points out, that usually means that they're going to be at war. So that's why all of the technology has to do with war. It's far more advanced than what they have in the Enterprise, only in that respect. Mm-hmm. When Celia and Anya get on the ship, they don't know like what a transporter is. They don't know yeah. any of this stuff, but their weapons are highly advanced because that is how their culture came from. Now, Celia is the product of one of the ruling families that lived on the light side and one of the ruling families that lived on the dark side. So the idea is that as the heiress of this, she can unite those two factions and Dalad 4 will no longer be at war.
Yeah.
And we learn all this. This is the confusing part. And I haven't found any information about this. Maybe I missed something. We learn all this through a conversation that Celia has in her quarters on the Enterprise with a young woman, kind of like herself, who is not Anya.
But dressed in green.
But yeah.
But it's a young version of Anya, right? Is that what that's supposed to be?
That's what I thought it was.
Because I was like, who is this hot girl?
Yeah,
she's very pretty.
It's a very attractive woman.
It's a very pretty
woman.
And
I only mention this because she immediately changes into like a bug-eyed muskrat.
Which, again, it's confusing because she turns into, yeah, like a 3-foot-tall, bug-eyed, hairy creature.
Yes.
And goes like, Suddenly, too. And it's right. Like, bah, 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 and they have this like conversation in a language we don't understand.
Yeah.
But it's like, where did this attractive woman come from?
And why did she turn into a bug-eyed muskrat?
And then later, that bug-eyed muskrat turns back into the woman we saw at the beginning.
I don't think it's ever established that there's anyone but Celia and Anya on the ship.
Yeah, so it's Celia.
It must be Anya, the governess.
Me. Yeah, yeah.
That changed into a younger woman and then changed into the muskrat.
But why change into the younger woman?
And I don't know.
Nobody on the ship saw her as the younger woman. Only Celia saw her as the younger woman. It's so confusing.
Yeah. We never see this person again either.
They don't even talk about it in any way. Is it to tell us that they're shapeshifters?
They could have done that by just showing Anya change into the muskrat. That would have been just as surprising.
Right.
And I think what they were trying to do is like, oh, you were attracted to this lady, huh? What? Yeah. Joke's on you. She's a furry. How do you feel about that? Are you questioning your sexuality right now? Are you going to try to fuck a koala?
Oh, God, Patrick.
I'm not saying that's what I was thinking. I'm saying
it is.
Maybe that's what the writers were thinking.
True the comedy, Patrick. No, but for
all
real.
It was confusing.
It was super confusing. Just change.
Just have Anya on there.
Yes.
You had these two characters. I know that they're trying to let you know that they're shapeshifters and they can take any form, but they only really have two forms in this, like humanoid or this furry thing.
What?
They never do anything else.
And that furry thing, again, another confusing point, is they become a small furry thing and then later a big furry
thing. So the young woman changed into a small furry thing. Later on, you know, spoiler, I guess, Anya changes into a big furry thing.
That's scary to everybody.
Right.
But they look like cousins. Like, it's the same species of furry thing. One's just huge and the other's small.
Maybe
right?
I missed something, like a line of dialogue.
If you could turn into anything, why not turn into like a giant praying mantis? Why does it look like a little furry thing versus a big furry thing?
I have no idea.
Right?
I was very confused about this part.
So confusing.
It relayed like important information that one, Celia does not want this status. She doesn't want to be the person to unite, you know, these two warring factions on her planet. She likes the Enterprise. She thinks it's cool.
It is cool.
She asks, like, you know, this conversation, what it interrupts is her asking Captain Picard, who's Wesley? You know? She's interested in Wesley.
Yeah.
Wesley's interested in her. She wants to pursue this and live her own life. But Anya, I guess, if that was Anya, is telling her, no, you can't do it.
It was Anya. It had to have.
You have a task that is more important than you. And it doesn't matter if you want it or not, because millions of lives hang in the balance. Which is a pretty cool conversation, which is blighted by this weird, confusing thing. We're introducing another character, if it was another character.
Well, it's the same character. It's a different actress.
I don't know why
just
they did
a younger
this.
Actress set up to look attractive. Like, had like an outfit on.
This is what the writers intended to do.
Yeah, it accented her curves. I don't know how else to put it. She looked great. Whereas when she's older, she's much more looks like a nun or something.
Yeah.
Right?
So... But that is Anya, right?
It's got to be Anya.
They didn't introduce any other character.
No, because there's not a third furry thing running around at any point.
If that is another character and I missed a line of dialogue, I'd say it's still stupid.
Well, then it's even more confusing.
Because, where did she go?
Where did she come from?
Yeah.
And then what happened to her? She was just there for one scene?
Either way, it's never explained. The point is, Celia doesn't want this. She's interested in Wesley. She wants to, like... explore being a young woman and, you know, not have to do this shit with her planet that she was born to do and didn't ask for. So that's going on. And meanwhile, Wesley is wandering around and...
Oh, boy.
He is in a daze. He's trying to work on the warp core or something, and he's screwing up. And...
What do you think of Geordi LaForge in this seat?
So, Geordi, he immediately notices, like, oh, this is a guy's... he's lovesick. Can't do his job.
Yep.
All the blood is going to his boner, not to his brain. He's going to kill all of us because he's working on a nuclear reactor.
He relieves him of duty.
He immediately relieves him of duty. And then, like, Wesley asks Data, how do I talk to a girl? Data had sex exactly one time and is an android and doesn't care about that kind of thing.
Well, he did try to ask Geordi about it as well.
And then he asked Geordi.
So a guy whose best friend is an android.
Right.
An android. Like, he's
the
going
two
to horrible
people
sources.
That we have almost never seen engaged in a relationship with another human being.
Yes.
He asks, like, how do I talk to somebody? And Geordi is just like, I don't know, just talk to her, which I guess is pretty good advice.
It's great advice. Be yourself and let the words come out. I'm too busy to talk about this bullshit. I got to get to work.
Yes.
You're slacking on the job.
Yeah, so Geordi has to go, like, make the ship not fall apart. Wesley's wandering around trying to figure out How do I talk to a girl? He asks Worf. Worf is like saying all this stuff about what Klingons do.
Oh, I love
super
this.
Super weird. Okay, so Worf has lived among humans all of his life. He's talking about what Klingon women do, yeah. and he's clearly very personally involved in this.
Well, he's getting excited.
Yeah.
But he's never experienced.
Yeah.
There's no way.
Unless in the holodeck.
Well, I guess.
I guess in the holodeck he probably has.
Which is like insinuated. It's not really, we don't know.
Yeah.
But he would know. He said before he studied Klingon culture.
That's true.
And some of that. So basically, Klingon women yell like a
right.
like a warrior's yell while
right.
the
while
men
they throw things.
Yeah, while the men read poetry. And
the duck. Men read poetry and like this is what Worf is into.
Yeah,
it is not what Wesley's into. Hey.
Get ready because they build on that. That is not a fake thing.
Yeah,
at all. Like they don't forget about those two lines. Most of this episode seems to have been forgotten. That premise within Klingon
that's
culture.
That's pretty cool.
Remains.
I
it's
do
great.
Like Worf in this episode.
Oh, yeah. He's great. It's one of Worf's best episodes so far.
But it's not working for Wesley. Wesley's like, that's not my style. So he goes, and finally he asks Riker.
Yeah, he does.
He goes to
hey,
10
for
forward.
For a young man, Riker would really help you out, you know?
He goes to 10 forward, and he asks Riker, he's like, hey, how do I talk to a woman? And Riker is, you know, he's being weird. But he's like, he asks Guinan. And I kind of like this scene because I'm pretty sure it was just Guinan and Riker fucking with Wesley.
Yes. And okay. Whoopi Goldberg gets to show off some of her comedic chops here.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
Her really funny timing. Like, she is definitely a comedic yeah. actress who's super talented. And you see it here. And also, she's messing with Riker a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, come on, hit
Riker's
me with the best
like,
you've got.
Riker is like fake flirting with Guinan, and Guinan is doing it back. And
oh,
it's
yeah, just taking
Wesley
what Riker's saying and
super uncomfortable. It. He is super uncomfortable by this. He's like, I don't think this is my style either, and then leaves.
Oh, it's a beautiful scene.
Yeah.
Probably one of my favorites of this episode.
So, you know, he just kind of does what he thinks he should do. Mm-hmm. He just goes and talks to her. He meets her at her quarters, and, you know,
well, lucky for him, she asked a question right away.
Yeah, she's into him.
Yeah, so and she's like, gave him a really easy into a conversation like, hey, can you help me eat
yeah.
dinner?
I don't know how to eat dinner.
Yeah.
Right. They don't have replicators or whatever.
Yeah.
So he helps her replicate like this chocolate mousse, and it's clear that they're into each other. He's talking about where the chocolate comes from. It's like some planet called Thalia.
Also, baller move. She sets it up and he hits it out of the park. She goes, I want something sweet. And he goes, chocolate. Like, come on.
I guess I would have.
Smooth.
I know I would have fucked this up and just been like, man, pistachio ice cream. Because that's all I ever want to eat.
Is it really?
I love pistachio ice cream.
Yeah.
No one else does.
No.
I would have ruined it.
For me, I like strawberry milkshakes.
Yeah.
You
that's
know?
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Do you want to get a phosphate? Like some Our Town shit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, no.
But he goes right for chocolate.
He goes, but and it's not just any chocolate. It's not any chocolate. It's from some place called Thalia or something. It's
yeah.
just a planet. It's a distant planet he's been to, and he tells her all about it. And she has never been anywhere.
No, she's been to
so
one
she's
planet.
Like, tell me all about it. And he's like, I can show you.
Yeah.
Like, go to the holodeck.
Again, Wesley Crusher killing it. That's
well,
baller move number
I
two.
Was, well, all right, so I was worried when that happened because I was like, uh-oh, someone's going to die. Every time someone goes in there, someone dies.
Mm-mm.
It didn't happen, though.
So he likes this girl. In a matter of, what, 30 minutes, he talks her into eating chocolate with him. Like, they have a meal together. And then he takes her to probably the most romantic place on the entire Enterprise, the holodeck.
Yeah, and they're seeing all this cool shit in the galaxy.
Yeah,
like,
the guy...
Oh.
That is some smooth moves.
It's pretty smooth.
So natural, and that just goes from point to point. Proud of you, Wesley Crusher.
I was not like that when I was 16 years old.
No.
I also didn't have, like, you know,
a
way to send someone to anywhere in the galaxy.
No.
So,
but he does a great, I mean, way to go, Wesley.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Meanwhile, Anya is wandering around the ship.
Yeah.
And she's, like, inspecting the warp core while Geordi's trying to work on it. And he's like, could you go somewhere else? And she keeps thinking the ship is going to fall apart. She's terrified. She doesn't trust the people on the Enterprise to take care of Celia. And keep in mind that if Celia dies, the hope for this planet of these two warring factions to make peace dies with her.
Right.
So
she's very important.
Yeah. So she's wandering all over the ship.
Also, I want to back up real quick.
Yeah.
She's also killing it because she likes Wesley. So she set this up as well.
That's
I don't
true.
Want to say it's all Wesley Crusher.
It's not. It was
the two of them are
Celia's
just,
idea.
Yeah, they're smooth moving their way
and
through.
And she gets
this
to see all this cool shit in the galaxy that she wanted to see.
Yeah, so, and make him feel like he's got something to show her and keep conversation going.
Right.
Sorry.
It's a shame it can't work out.
What?
So Anya then goes to the sick bay, and Dr. Pulaski is working on this patient that, you know, he's got like, I don't know, cold. He's got some treatable disease. Mm-hmm. And Anya's like, that man has a communicable disease. What are the chances that that would spread to the rest of the ship? And Pulaski's like, it's not going to happen. He's fine. He's like, okay, it's not going to happen, or there's a chance it could happen. And she has to admit there is a non-zero chance, but it's like 99.9999% safe.
Yeah.
And then she's like, I got to kill him. What? No, don't do that. And Anya says, no, if you're not going to kill him, I will. And she changes into this huge, like, bug-eyed furry thing.
Right, which is the first time we see the big version.
The big one.
We saw a little one earlier.
Yeah, and it's kind of shitty. I know it's 1989, but it doesn't look good.
Well, the director agreed with you.
Yeah.
That's why we see a lot of people screaming and reacting.
Yeah, there's a lot of shots of, like, Pulaski calls security. Worf is, like, wrestling with Anya in her bug monster form. Security is just kind of standing there because Picard orders them to hold their fire. He doesn't want to mess up this diplomatic mission.
See, I'm so confused, though. Like, again, this is a confusing moment.
Yep.
Why doesn't she kill Worf? Like, why does she stop?
All right, so I think what happens is, so it stops. The fighting stops.
Yeah.
Anya is being confined, and they have this conversation between her and Worf, and it looks to us like a verbal slap fight. Worf is like, yeah. I got you. You're confined. And she's like, I could have killed you if I had the chance, but I didn't want to. I didn't want to complicate the mission. And Worf is like pushing back because he wants to prove how strong he is and you know, like how good he is at fighting.
Right.
And she says, look, I can't be confined because my mission is to protect Celia.
This is a great scene, right?
Yeah,
there,
it's actually
too.
A pretty good scene. And Worf is saying, look, I'm going to do that for you. That's what I was trying to do.
Oh, yeah.
You can't go around killing people.
But she's like, you can't have two things you're trying to protect.
Yeah, no.
You're in charge of the ship.
I'm in charge of one person and one person only.
Yes.
I don't care about the ship.
Which
I care
is great.
About Celia.
I love that.
So they're just kind of at an impasse. And finally, you know, she insists that she won. And Worf is like, and yet you're confined. And like kind of walks away.
But she did win.
She did, but she stopped. I think she's right. I think she's totally right in that she just decided to stop because she didn't want to like have to kill everyone in the room.
Yeah.
Because then
who's
going to fly the ship? Probably.
Yeah. Well, after you kill Picard, what's going to
happen? Yeah, I know. What are you going to do?
Be constant combat. Yeah.
So then this is where the split happens, basically, between Wesley and Celia, unfortunately. So after this incident, you got to do something about this relationship between Wesley and Celia. So Picard kind of explains to him, gives him classified information after he figures out what's going on, because Anya doesn't know where Celia is and is freaking out.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, buddy. She's an allomorph, which I didn't know what the hell that was.
Yeah, and Wesley, also should be the title of the episode.
Probably. They said Dauphin once. And Wesley's like, oh, a shapeshifter? Okay, good for you.
Guess you know.
Read a lot of Wikipedia, dude. All right. So Picard tells him, he's like, normally, I don't really give a shit about people's relationships on the ship as long as it doesn't interfere with anything. You know, we're like all 24th century people here, but in this case, dude, you can't. Sorry, you can't.
We got this diplomatic mission.
There's a diplomatic mission. Yeah. Also, people can die. So please stay away from her. And Wesley's heartbroken.
Yeah. I mean, he agrees because he respects Picard that much.
Yeah.
But he is heartbroken.
Yeah. Wesley's heartbroken. Celia doesn't like this either. She's like, there's a scene where she's arguing with Anya about this.
Who never became the young woman.
Again.
Like, why?
Never seen this again.
Like, if she was a young woman at the beginning when they're having, like, these personal one-on-one conversations.
Nope.
I don't get it. Where did that come from,
Patrick? I don't know. I don't know either. Wesley's heartbroken, but then later Celia takes initiative and sneaks out while Anya's sleeping, to visit Wesley in his quarters.
Mm-hmm.
And she makes a move. You know, they're kind of about to kiss, and then Anya comes in.
I think they did kiss.
They did?
I think so.
Yeah, I guess they did. Because, but Anya comes in immediately.
Oh, yeah. They didn't get to second base.
No. Or whatever the equivalent of that is in Star Trek.
Yeah.
I don't know what kind of sports they play or what their euphemisms are. Right. But Anya comes in, changes into the bug-eyed muskrat thing, the big one.
The big version, not the small one that we saw.
Not the small one that we saw and is never explained again.
And in the only in quarters.
Right.
Yeah.
And scares the hell out of Wesley. And Wesley is not just scared at that, but he knows that that's what Celia is.
Which I think is why, like, again, to my fun fact at the beginning, the reason he's so scared by that is because we had to cut away from looking at that costume.
To cut
to
Wesley.
It's like almost overacted in this moment.
Yeah, but that's not his fault.
No.
He just had the camera on him, and the director tells him, like, all right, now look real scared.
For as long as he can.
Look real, real scared for 15 seconds.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, ooh. What? Crusher.
So he's, like, repulsed by this.
Yes.
And not only is he repulsed by Anya, he's repulsed by Celia.
Who turns into a red version of this bug-eyed creature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, this is what they look like.
So they're not really shape-shifter.
No. This is just this a is form. This is a form that they take.
So they take, again, this is why this episode's confusing. Yeah. That very strong, large, bug-eyed version that can beat up a Klingon, which has to be very strong, is that their natural form? No, it's not. We know that by the end of the episode. So that's some creature they've seen that they know is really strong. Like, who is this bug-eyed creature?
I don't know.
Right?
Because like, we see at the end they have a true form. This isn't their true form.
Which looks a lot like Odo from Deep Space Nine. That's
yeah,
why
I have no idea, dude.
Put my question out at the beginning, because I have no idea why they keep changing into the same like variants of this bug-eyed thing.
I don't know.
Okay.
It doesn't make any goddamn sense to me.
Yeah. Because you're not the guy to ask this question.
This is the first time I've
seen it. I need a Brian Sebi here to answer that question because I'm so confused.
This is the first time I've seen it. In my mind, I thought that they were always this furry thing, but then at the end I find out that they're not. I'm like, okay, well why are they this furry thing?
Where did that come from?
Is that like their warlike form?
It must be. That must be how they battle. But if they battle that way, they have technology.
Maybe that is their technology.
No, we find out later they have this super powerful...
Oh, they have like... Yeah, because they try to communicate. So yeah, this is the other thing that happens. When they try to communicate to the planet, they find out that it's like, oh, you need like 1 terawatt or something to be able to get through the atmosphere, and they can't.
But that's what... So they have real technology where a bunch of phasers would totally be any sort of physical form.
I don't know. I'm not the one to ask, and I'm very confused about this. So listeners, why do they have 2 different forms, or do they have infinite forms?
They have infinite forms.
Why did Celia choose to do this?
Was she a red version of the bug-eyed creature.
I think maybe she was trying to scare Wesley away to say, like, look, don't be attracted to me, but why did she go to his quarters?
No, she didn't do that for Wesley. She did it to fight off.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, she likes Wesley.
So maybe, here's my guess. My guess is that this furry thing is what they do in combat.
So when they need to be in their strongest form.
When they need to be in their strongest form possible, because we see that when she tries to kill the person in the sick bay. We see it when she tries to scare Wesley, we find out later. And we see it when Celia tries to fight her off. But their other form is for other purposes. This is my guess.
Turn into beautiful women.
Yeah.
Change their age.
Yep.
For no reason. It's very confusing.
So after this, Celia's talking to Anya. This is actually a nice scene where Anya's telling him, look, I didn't want to hurt him. I just wanted to scare him because you can't have this relationship. It's kind of like a mirror of the conversation that Picard has with Wesley. You know, Anya's saying, there is a cause that is bigger than you, and unfortunately, you were the only one that can fulfill it.
Yeah, and as a teenager, you're going to be falling in love.
Yeah, there's nothing we can do about that, but the point is that Anya raised her, and she says, I think I raised you well, and I think you're ready to meet this challenge. So I'm going to go back to my home on like this third moon or something. They're going to transport me there, and you're going to go back home. You're going to do fine. You're going to repair this, you know, break between these 2 different peoples. And you'll do great. And then she's like, well, will I be able to leave the planet? Because this is more than Wesley. I think Celia is not really... She's attracted to Wesley, but what she's mainly attracted to is the idea of exploring. and the idea of leaving her homeworld.
Yeah, which I think is awesome.
It's cool.
And it's really great that they've established this in the character, and I think it's what makes this episode not horrible.
Shit, yeah.
Yeah, is that she has interests. Like, her interest isn't Wesley. Wesley, like, embodies them at certain points. But her true interests are, I want to see this asteroid belt. Yeah. I want to see the world.
Because she's never done it.
I want to see the galaxy. The world is too small in Star Trek. But I need to get out there more, is what she's saying. And Wesley represents that for her.
Because
he
works on a starship. So, yeah.
But and they can relate, but it's not really...
It's not really him.
It's not really him, no. And that's awesome.
Yeah.
And that's why he's so hurt.
But
later.
Then this kind of like crushes her eyes. Like, you're probably never going to leave the world. You can't. Mm-hmm. You got to rule it. And this is just the responsibility that you have. I know that sucks. I'm not saying it doesn't suck. I'm just saying that in order for millions of people on our home planet not to die, the person that's from this, you know, half one part of the world and half the other part has to be the person in charge. So
yeah.
Sucks for you, but I'm going to go back to my home moon now. Bye. And then...
I was going to say something there. Nothing to say there.
Yeah.
That sucks.
It does. It sucks for Celia. And then what sucks for her more is she goes to try to say goodbye to Wesley. Try to explain the situation to her, to him. And she, you know, she does her best, but Wesley is just like, he feels betrayed. And he was like, he accuses her of playing humanoid.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about this scene.
I don't either, because Wesley was just told she was a shapeshifter.
He knew.
He knew this.
He knew the whole time.
Yeah.
He can't be surprised when she
changes into something
else.
She
becomes exactly what she was supposed to be the entire time.
They also have this extremely teenager conversation where they say they love each other or something. He's like, are you even capable of love? And she's like, yes, look, when I'm in this shape right now, when I am in the shape of a humanoid, I'm a human. Yeah. This is what I am.
Yeah, I feel everything a human feels.
All the same stuff that you do, and just because I'm in another shape at another time, that doesn't mean that I wasn't this for you. It doesn't. I'm a shapeshifter, so the whole point is that I am what I am at that particular moment in time. And he's just not getting it.
No, he's a jerk.
He's a real asshole, and then he just goes like, please go.
Yeah, he's a real jerk. It's interesting because he says, I loved you. But then to me, and all right.
He's 15. He doesn't.
30. Yeah, exactly. 31-year-old married guy here. But I'm like, if that is what made you not love her, her fulfilling exactly who she is, then you didn't love her. Like, you need to acknowledge the fact then that you loved some sort of like fantasy you had about her, some sort of thing you have set up in your mind. But you didn't love this creature who's a shapeshifter if her being a shapeshifter is what
that's
ruins
a deal breaker.
Relationship for you. You didn't love her, you idiot.
This is everything that he knew, and he got pissed when he actually saw it in reality.
Yeah, it's like
it's basically
I love
what happened.
I love independent women. And then you did.
You're an independent woman.
You did exactly what you want to do, and didn't do what I told you to do.
Fuck that.
Fuck you. Yeah, it's like no, you idiot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is the space version of that.
It is though. Yeah, exactly.
But it is extremely like 15 to 16-year-old.
I guess it's true. It's been too long since I've been that age. I mean, I never fought with girls that way or with love interests that way.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, this is, it's heightened, you know, for
yeah, it's like
drama
Twilight
television
or whatever.
But yeah, he's just being a dick. He's a jerk.
He's a real jerk.
He's being a 16-year-old boy.
But I don't even, anyway, I don't think it's that realistic.
Well, the shapeshifters aren't real either.
Yeah, but he knew she was a... That's what I'm saying. It's like another confusing element of this episode.
Yeah.
You knew she was a shapeshifter.
Well,
and you fell in love with her anyway.
It's kind of short-lived because she's about to leave, and as she's in the transporter room, I guess Wesley feels remorse, and he comes back to say goodbye. And she's like, I'm very glad that you came to say goodbye. And, you know, he kind of apologizes.
He's being a moody jerk.
I think he sincerely apologizes. And then she says, I would like you to leave now. And he says, why? And she says, I want you to remember me like this as a human because I have to take my true form to be able to beam back down to the planet. And he's like, no, I can take it or whatever.
And at this moment, I'm expecting a large, furry, weird-looking creature.
Exactly, because that's what they have been. There has been no inclination that they change into anything else.
Yes.
But she changes into this like being of liquid light.
Right, which kind of looks like Odo. That's
Does
why
it?
I'm throwing out my question. Are they related?
She changes into Mike Pence. And
but when he changed, like, they look very similar.
Oh, well, so it's like a beam of light, and Wesley's like, whoa. And
I'm still in love.
Yeah.
Or in love again. I don't know. I'm a teenager.
Yeah. And, you know, but he's kind of conflicted.
Yeah.
Because at the end, the final scene is he is in 10 forward. And he's nursing his sorrows, and I guess a glass of seltzer or something. I don't know what the hell it is he's drinking. And Guinan,
it's all synthahol anyway.
So yeah, it doesn't matter. Guinan comes to talk to him, and they talk about like first love, basically.
I love how she just kind of shows up at the table too.
Yeah, that's her job though. She's
sweet
a bartender.
Guinan move.
Yeah, she's a 1,500-year-old bartender.
Yeah.
So, what I thought was cool about this final scene was Guinan doesn't give him all the platitudes. Well, she does at first. She's just like, yeah, I know that feeling. Yeah, you feel empty inside. All right, yeah, that sucks. And then he's like, I don't think I'll ever feel this again. And she says, you know what? You're right. Because it's different every single time. So,
yeah.
And then he's like, it hurts. And he's like, yeah, that's the point. And then the episode just ends.
Yeah, which of course you love that.
yeah.
But it is great advice, that whole idea of, like, love is always unique between two different people. And so that's her whole point, is like, yeah, you won't feel this way again. There'll be others that you'll love, but you'll never feel the way you did about this woman or shapeshifter. Who knows?
Yeah.
It was an interesting episode. Breaking it apart like that made me think about it a little differently than I did while watching it.
I don't think it was presented very well.
No, it was not well executed.
It was way more confusing than it needed to be.
Yeah, so I think that's a great transition into the part where we like to rate the episode.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Patrick, do you know how we do this? I'll tell you.
I think I do. I forget.
Yeah, did you forget?
Yeah.
If we thought it was amazing, television that you must watch, we set it to kill. If we thought it was like, okay, that's an episode worth watching if it comes up in the queue, we set to stun. And if it's boring, horrible, ignore at all costs, we leave it in the holster. So, Patrick, what did you think of this one?
You know, even after dissecting it, it did sound a little better than what it actually was. I'm going to have to say leave in the holster.
Oh, wow.
It was just forgettable.
Real low.
It was forgettable. You don't need to see it. It wasn't bad. It's just, it was more confusing than it needed to be.
Yeah, I agreed.
It didn't really advance any character's story. We know Wesley's a teenager. We know he's probably going to fall in love and do like dumb teenager stuff. The only thing I think was really worth watching is Worf scenes.
Yeah, they were great. Best Worf scenes of the series so far.
Yeah, I don't know. Just if that's really what you want to see, just like search YouTube for Worf scenes. I don't know.
Well, Worf continuously
to go back and watch this. It don't, you know, it's 45 minutes long. It's got to be good if I'm telling someone to go and watch something. It's not worth it.
You know what's so funny, Patrick? Is you saying that episode is a leave it in the holster.
Why is that funny?
Like, it's fine. There's some really great moments in it.
Yeah.
Now, it is not a set to kill episode. It is totally, for me,
thank God,
a set to stun episode. Pretty mediocre. But there are some beautiful moments throughout it. And you've just put that on the same level as you did.
Not every leave it in the holster is Skin of Evil or Code of Honor.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it's completely forgettable.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It's not essential viewing, but it's not bad. I really like Worf's moments in this, and Will Wheaton does a pretty good job as Wesley Crusher. Like, it's pretty good. So it's such a stun. Like,
I'm not gonna fight you there. I don't. Yeah. I definitely thought about that. Who I will give set to kill though is Ozzy for being a very good dog.
Yeah, he didn't bark once.
He didn't bark once.
He barked throughout the entire watching of the episode.
We had to feed him treats. So
yeah, I have been stuffing his face with treats.
Yeah, you did great, Ozzy. Way to go.
Good boy. Also, those costumes.
Man, yeah, wow. It was pretty bad.
Wow. We're just talking.
Maybe watch it for that.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like, what was that, Grock, the green guy in the original series?
I never saw that.
Oh, he's the green lizard. Looks horrible. It has dated itself very much, like Kirk and I think Gron. Gron is his name.
I believe you.
Yeah, their fight. It doesn't matter. It starts with a G. It's a lizard man. It has aged so poorly.
It's a Mike Pence.
But it has aged so poorly. It's like when you want to make fun of Star Trek, the original series, what you're making fun of. This is like the equivalent of that as far as special effects not holding up. Anyway, Is there anything you want to talk about before we get out of here?
Yeah, just keep giving us reviews on iTunes. It makes us appear more in the ratings. And yeah, you already know all the other stuff. Politicked Off, satirical news show that I do with Zach Mast. And follow Peaches and Hot Sauce on YouTube. We got some videos that we're making. I think they're pretty funny.
Cool. Yeah, I think so too. I'm a part of both of those projects in some way or another. Also, Dungeon Rats.
Oh, yeah, hell yeah.
Please check that out. Chad, who is played by our friend Patrick Winnegar,
yeah.
Recently has gone missing. But fun fact, I am doing an impression of you.
Oh, yeah?
Well, your Chad.
Okay, me being Chad.
Yeah, you okay. Being Chad. Not you as like an individual, but like a character that you play. I'm all trying right. to do that character. It okay. is very difficult. I'm having a lot of fun, but it's your hand, and it got possessed, and now it's Chand.
Yeah.
The hand of
Chad. I haven't actually watched this episode yet. I got to go back and do that.
But hear me doing that character. No, that's me trying to channel Patrick Winnegar.
Okay.
Which I don't think I'm necessarily suited for.
I don't even know if I'm suited for it.
Well, I think I've said this before. Patrick Winnegar is my favorite heel in the world. If I ever want someone to play like a really funny heel, oh, Patrick Winnegar kills it. So anyway. I'm talking about you like you're not here.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. Oh, it's amazing. So I'm trying to be that version of a heel. So please check out Dungeon Rats. It's over on the One Shot Podcast Network, One Shot Podcast's YouTube page, or One Shot RPG on Twitch. We do it every other Monday, so next Monday we will be back up and running. And follow me at Pat Likes a Tweet, because Facebook is for noobs.
Let's see what's out there.
Peaches. Hot sauce. 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 Got your peaches.